This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you're listening to Bicycle Talk. It's December 18th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, please call 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk at numeral one at gmail.com, or you can visit and comment at Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, so I am traveling into Hartford the other day, and as I'm traveling into Hartford, I look over at the Charter Oak Trail, and it is covered in snow and ice. Who cleans the trails? This is my rant today, okay? Who is responsible for cleaning those trails? I believe the towns are responsible for that, but I'm not sure. I haven't had my information people get back to me on that, but that would be a good thing to know, because why is it so important to get the roads cleared for cars and trucks, but not so important to get the trails cleared for bicycles and pedestrian traffic? My rant, that's where I'm at. That's what I wanted to talk about today. If anybody knows about that, you can contact me at Bicycle Talk, the numeral one at gmail.com. I'd love to hear what you have to say, or you can just call us because Fran is here answering the phones today. So that is 860-486-9487. So anyway, I was amazed because I know people that commute into Hartford all the time from Eastern Connecticut, and the bike trail was basically unable to be used, but we'll get to that on the mechanical minute. I'll get on to that. On a positive side, the National Cyclocross Championships. Yeah, I spent the whole day, wasted a whole day watching the National Cyclocross Championships live on the internet. It was awesome. That was a really, really cool thing. Thank you very much to USA Cycling for sponsoring that. Really appreciate it. There's a bunch of stuff to talk about, not a bunch, but a few things that I wanted to mention. And one is a really, really big shout out to Lizzie Gonzalez from Massachusetts. She is on the Cannondale Cyclocross World Race Team. She finished third in her age group, which is ladies, I think 17 to 19, I think is where she falls. Anyway, she was third. Lizzie came out to Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross, my cyclocross race, all the way back in 2013. That's where I first met her. I think she might have been, she was young. If it's 2013 or 2019, that was a long time ago. So anyway, that's where I first met her, with her father, who supports her and her racing endeavor. And she's just amazing. And she placed third in the Nationals. So big shout out to Lizzie. I don't know if you're listening or not, Lizzie, but if you are, give me a yell. I want you on the air with me. I need to know all about your Nationals experience. So we'll talk cross and bicycles and all the silly things that we talk about here on Bicycle Talk. Anyway, big, big shout out there. Another item to bring up, and this is a big one. We had a dethroning of the national champion. Stephen Hyde has won the national championships three times now. He was third this year. Second to Curtis White. It was an unbelievable battle. It went back and forth the whole time. It was so cool to watch. As you can tell, I get very excited by this. The first place finisher was Gage Hecht from Colorado, and he just basically rode away with it. He got out in front, and he maintained a 10 to 15 second lead for the entire race. It was pretty impressive, and we were all waiting for him to blow up because he's a youngster, and we figured he went too early, but he didn't. He won the race, so that was a big deal. On the women's end, I need to bring this up. This is a big one. Katie Compton, she is an American legacy in cyclocross racing. Katie is, she has won the National Cyclocross Championships 15 times. That's right, 15 times. And she went into the race. Now, you have to understand, too, Katie is 41 years old, and she has won the National Cyclocross Championships 15 times. So that is quite an amazing career. I don't think anyone will ever beat that. I really don't. She is amazing to watch. When she came to the Nationals here in Hartford, we were we watched her do it there too. She's just incredible, and really supportive of the other women racers out there. She's a legend, and that's a really cool thing. But Katie, there comes a time where you have to take off your cycling cap and pass it on to the next one. And what ended up happening is that Katie took third place this year. Second place was Rebecca Ferringer, and first place was Clara Hossinger. 2 points to make here. First place, women, Clara Hossinger. First place, men, Gage Hecht, 22 years old, both of them. So this is a little bit of a shout-out here, and this is why I put it on the positive side, a little bit of a shout-out here to the fact that all this junior development racing, which has been happening across the U.S., that everyone was thinking, you know, oh, cycling, bicycle racing's dying, bicycle racing is dead. No, it's not. No, it's not. We've got some serious up-and-comers, and these guys and girls are really a step ahead of where we have been in the past. So we're going to get a little bit more European domination out of this. I know one of the riders was given a leave of absence from a professional road team over in Europe so that he could come and ride the Nationals here. I mean, there's things happening in cycling that if you're into bicycle racing at all, like I am, it's pretty exciting. Anyway, moving on. Remember I talked earlier about the rail trails and the bike trails that are covered in ice and snow and all that? Well, I got a little bit of something you might want to check out here, and that is I have a little piece here of 4 steps to mastering icy road rides. Now, icy road rides are not, I would say a road ride is probably not something that you will probably go out on icy roads, but if you're a commuter, you're in it every day. You're going to be out there. You're going to be riding on the ice and snow. And you got to deal with it. And you got to learn how to deal with it. So scout out your route. Okay, you want to take a look and you want to see possibly the roads that are more likely to be plowed and plowed early. Possibly the ones that might have a little bit more of a shoulder on them because of that. It's really, really tough. But you definitely want to catch the less trafficked but early plowed roads. So you'll get a good feel for it. If you ride your bike to work every day, you have a really good idea which roads we're talking about. So especially if your local town government is not plowing or maintaining your trail that goes through town. And if they aren't, you should reach out to them. You know, just give them a call and say, hey, who's responsible for doing this? This would be a really nice thing. I ride this every day. You know, make a mention of it. It's a good thing. Squeaky wheels get oiled. Remember that. So, studded tires. Do you want to do it? You don't want to do it. If you are riding every single day and it's going to be an expense that you're going to have to deal with. But I have got to tell you, a studded tire is like magic when you ride in these conditions. You can get them for mountain bicycles. You can get them for road bicycles. They are available. They are not they're not an economy item. They're definitely a little on the pricey side, but they are so, so nice. I had a set of studded tires on a mountain bike, and when the lake froze behind our house with a foot of ice on it, I was out like laying it over hard into the corners and not falling down. It's so cool. It's kind of a rush is what it is. But if you're actually commuting, it's kind of a nice idea. It definitely helps. So you definitely, those are some things you can do just to deal with riding in the snow and ice. But I would say one of the things you might check out is if you have a bike trail that is going through your town and it's not being maintained, you need to go talk to the Public Works Department and say, hey, what's the deal here? Are you guys responsible for this, or is this a community effort, or what is the answer? Find out what the right answer is. And get them to take care of it, because up here on the University of Connecticut campus, we have lots of sidewalks and lots of walkways around campus, and they have these small plows that fit into those smaller areas, and they clear them up pretty nicely. So Bicycles are important, pedestrians are important, and that brings us on to the fact that we have a guest on our show today, which I'm very, very excited about because I shouted her out a few weeks back when the we had the Harper Current reported on the $21 billion, Governor Ned Lamont's $21 billion transportation plan. And I shouted her out because she made a comment in the Harper Current. She caught my attention, and then my friends all said, you need to get a hold of her. She would love to be on your show. So anyway, we'll get to this. So moving on, my guest was born and raised in Hartford, Connecticut. She has professional experience in communications, community organizing, and specialty food. Currently works for the Center of Latino Progress, home of Bicico Bicycle Community Shop. You hear me talk about them a lot in Hartford, Connecticut. She's the assistant coordinator for the Transport Hartford. She managed Road to Zero Hartford, a year-long grant from the National Safety Council to reduce traffic fatalities in the city. In summer of 2019, she facilitated a six-week internship for 10 Hartford teens exploring traffic data, environmental issues, urban planning, city history, civic engagement, and more. One of the youth's favorite experiences was managing the bike valet at two of Hartford's premier free cultural events, Monday Night Jazz and Nightfall. Recently, she and her team presented at the second annual Multimodal Transit Summit held in New Haven on November 25th. A resident of Frog Hollow, where 40% of the households don't own a car, Gannon brings lived experiences to active transportation issues in Connecticut. She ran for public office in 2018, and she's currently pursuing an MBA right here at the University of Connecticut. My guest is Gannon Long, the Transport Hartford Assistant Coordinator at the Center for Latino Progress. Welcome to Bicycle Talk.
Thank you so much for having me, Ron. I'm thrilled to be here.
That's a really wordy introduction, huh?
Well, you asked me for a bio. So
no, you did good. No, that's we like that. We like that. Fran and I, when we have guests on the show, we like to get bios so we can kind of give people an idea who you are, what you do, and yeah. And that's impressive. That's good stuff.
Thank you.
So I have to ask you, because I have to ask every single new participant to Bicycle Talk, obviously this is a bicycle show, so can you relate your very first experience on a bicycle?
Yeah, and I was probably a little young to even have a clear memory of it, but I was probably about five years old, and okay. I remember my father grew up in Boston in Savin Hill, and so I remember they picked me out a bicycle for my birthday in August. It was pink and purple, Huffy with
Ooh.
Streamers on the side.
Ooh, nice.
Really the best.
Nice.
My parents are amazing. And they took us to learn how to ride a bike, I think, at Castle Island, which is just a nice kind of beach area in South Boston, and you can just ride in a flat straight line with no cars for a long time.
Perfect.
My father sort of helping me balance, holding the back of the seat,
yeah.
and then letting me take off.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's everybody remembers their first time on the bicycle. And
yeah.
and it's weird because maybe it's not weird. Maybe it's common. But more, I would say at least 80% of the people reflect on their father teaching them how to ride a bike,
yeah.
which is really kind of interesting.
Well,
yeah.
my dad was a...
sorry, Franny.
He was a runner, but as he got older, his knees kind of went out, and so he became more of a cyclist.
That's what they call old runners, cyclists.
Cyclists, that's right. but actually, I was thrilled to meet with you today because I think you know a good friend of yours, Bruce Belm.
Yes,
I
do.
Who I wanted to shout out.
Yes,
and,
I do.
Bruce is my uncle, and so he and my dad have done the Vernon to Vernon ride 100 miles, you know, up to Vermont and back. They went on a bike trip to Puerto Rico for a week with their other brother-in-law when I was a kid, and they were both just really into that. I think he was more of a recreational, you know, working out cyclist,
right.
Whereas today I'm more of a I use it more for transportation than for exercise. But, Bruce was kind of ahead of the curve for a long time. I remember him having a bumper sticker, share the road.
Oh, yeah.
For a long, you know, many years before, as a kid. And so I think that kind of, that also kind of was an influence on my transportation outlook and choices in the future.
Bruce is always a little ahead of the curve. Hi, Bruce. I know you're listening. I know I made mention that Gannon was going to be on the air with me today. And actually, he texted me and said, hey, I heard that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, a big shout out to Bruce Bellum out there in Lebanon, Connecticut, and good friend and good cycling partner. And anyway, So, yeah, Bruce, that story, by the way, I have heard.
Because,
you know, Bruce does like to tell stories.
I've heard a few of his stories.
He makes good New Jersey Turnpike chili, too.
Yes, he does. He makes a lot of good things. He's a good cook. So, boy, Bruce, you're getting all sorts of stuff here. I told you should have come on the air with me today. Anyway, we're here with Gannon because Gannon had a bit of a remark, I guess I will say, to the Harper Current. I brought it up in my show because someone passed it over to me and said, hey, Ron, did you see this? And I saw it and I went, I can't believe this. $21 billion transportation budget, right? Not a word about pedestrians or bicycles.
Yeah.
Not a word anywhere. Is there?
I was stunned. There's a bicycle icon. If you look at ct2030.com,
yeah.
There's a picture of a bicycle on the top that doesn't take you to any bicycle planning. It just takes you back to the homepage for the plan.
No way.
I think of that initial. So they've revised it a little bit where it's now around $19 billion based on the funding that they've been able to find. But of that, about 0.25% is focused on sidewalks and pedestrian infrastructure. I think mostly spending that's already happening and just kind of they're articulating
right.
it in the plan.
Right.
But there's 0% of any funding for bicycle-specific infrastructure. Buses, which are also a common way to get around for people who don't have a car,
mm-hmm.
Are about 2% of the plan. And of the mass transit portion, which is a third of the plan, about 93% of that money is going towards trains, mostly infrastructure in Fairfield
County.
Oh, I see
who we're taking care of.
And about 7% of that goes towards buses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So my comments in the Hartford Current were really, and there were a few. I was grateful to have the chance to share my views with them. But it's really about if you don't have people who take the bus or who walk or who are taking a bicycle to get around, then you're not going to in the room making those plans. Then you're not going to have a robust plan for those types of folks. And I think there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that we miss when we don't include a diverse group of voices in the planning process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're spot on. And you know, if you talk to someone like Mayor Luke in Hartford, I mean, he wants to see this happen more than ever because it draws a millennial crowd into his city. It starts to build his city to the point where and they don't buy cars or trucks. You don't own a car, right?
Own a car, and I haven't since 2010. I moved to Washington, D.C., and within a couple months, I realized it just wasn't worth the cost and the headache of having to pay for the car, and they have a robust public transit system. It's a very walkable city. In Hartford, it's a pretty small city. The public transit isn't as good, but it's definitely there. But you can walk quite a distance in Hartford and get to a lot of places. The thing is, how safe are the sidewalks? And as we get along in the conversation, I'd love to get back to your rant about clearing the paths
because that's
a big issue and one that I actually faced this morning on the way out here. So I could talk about that a little bit.
Well, if it's a sidewalk, it's a property owner responsibility. So whether you own your building or you you live there or you don't, or you own the building and you don't live there, it is your responsibility by law to clear the sidewalks.
So it's one of the challenges that we have in Connecticut, and I think it manifests in a number of different ways, is that we're 169 different towns, each with our own laws and our own policies and our own special, unique systems of doing things. Meanwhile, we have regional services that are housed in cities like Hartford. You know, almost 50% of the land in Hartford isn't taxable because it's owned by the state of Connecticut, it's owned by nonprofits, it's owned by churches, it's owned by hospitals, it's owned by the city of Hartford itself. And so these are services that everyone in the region uses, but Hartford alone is responsible for taking care of. So when you say, so I'll give you an example, and I kind of look at, you know, I live near downtown, which is really the best kept neighborhood in the city.
Mm-hmm.
So, but even there, you really see some inefficiencies and some issues that are pretty glaring with safety. So from my street, I can walk on a path that's part of the East Coast Greenway right behind the Legislative Office Building.
Really?
And it goes over I-84, the highway that divides our city and causes a lot of pollution and issues for people who live there.
Right.
While speeding up commuters who are coming in and out. But as you walk over that path, part of that path is controlled by, you can, you know, a snow day is a great way to see who exactly owns this little portions of the path. And instead of having one entity that clears the entire way, you have the state of Connecticut, one office, the legislative office might clear one part of it. The East Coast Greenway itself might be responsible for another part of it. Mm-hmm. Hartford Department of Public Works might be responsible for another part, the part that goes through Bushnell Park. And then you have other, you know, the governors, you know, the administrative branch, or you might have the railroad, or you might have DOT. So literally on a half a mile path that you're walking, and I can show you pictures where there's also bike tire marks because people do cycle that way to get downtown. It's a lot, even with that lack of clearing it, it's still a safer way to walk or to bike than on the main roads. So from my path to Union Station, where I catch the bus, right through, you know, the most famous, beautiful park, downtown park in Hartford, you know, there's still ice, and then you see no ice where it was cleared. And then a few feet later, more ice where that entity, they shoveled up to their part, they stopped shoveling there, and then that was it. So, you know, the Department of Public Works in Hartford is responsible for clearing those paths. They're responsible for clearing even the sidewalks outside of the park. Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot of effort. We're an under-resourced city that's used by, you know, those paths are used by everybody in the region. And it's just a lot. It's unfortunately a lot more complicated than people would think to just get that one path clear. And if it looks that way downtown in Bushnell Park, across from Union Station, where commuters who are taking the Hartford line come in, where legislators work and people who work for the state government work there.
Sure.
If it's that bad in that part of the city, you could just imagine what it's like in the neighborhoods like mine, where more than 40% of the households don't own a car, and where you see higher levels of poverty than you do in most parts of the state.
Wow. Well, I am unfamiliar with the East Coast Greenway that goes through Hartford. I don't know about that. At some point, I might have to come out there, and you'll have to show me where this is.
It's a little more way than green, but yes, technically it is part of it.
But the question is, who owns it? And you know, the Greenway out here, when you get to when you get out onto the Airline Trail, which is a big Greenway project out here, that is essentially, it used to be owned by the Department of Transportation because the Department of Transportation had rails on it, so therefore it was deemed transportation. As soon as it became a Greenway, they handed over the responsibility and now belongs to the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Mm. So, but then there's a municipal clause in there too. So I know that I dealt with an issue in Willimantic where barriers had been put up on the trail and nobody ever wanted to claim responsibility as to who put the barriers up or why they were put up.
Right.
And I had to do a lot of digging. But when I contacted the DEP on it, they said not our responsibility.
Right.
And they said that's Wyndham.
I've heard that before. Not our responsibility.
Not our responsibility. Yeah, that's a famous.
Heard that phrase a couple times.
It's a famous get out of jail slogan right there. It's not good. So anyway, they directed me there, and the town of Wyndham looked at me and said, "No, that's not ours. That belongs to the DEP." And I said, "You guys need to communicate because you don't quite have this down." Or actually, they told me, "No, that's Department of Transportation." I said, "Well, no, they handed that over, and now it's DEP." And so eventually, after making a number of comments, including to a landowner, a business landowner who apparently was responsible for those things getting there in the first place.
Right.
I know who removed them, so I know who took the responsibility, and that would be the DEP.
Right.
And they were out there in a flash when I gave them a significant warning about what might happen if they stayed there.
And I could give you another more specific example. This is, again, you know, I'm pretty Hartford focused, so this is in Hartford, but I'm talking about regional assets. I'm talking about the Capitol for the state of Connecticut. I'm talking about the state Supreme Court and library and the Bushnell, which is a very popular destination for concerts, shows, things, you know, people all over the state go there. So there's an intersection in Hartford that is at the corner of Capitol Avenue, Washington Street, and Trinity Street. And this is the intersection where the state capitol is across the street from the Bushnell.
Right.
So again, a very prominent place where lots of powerful people with money go frequently, right? They go to the Capitol, they go to the Bushnell for shows. And, you know, that not my responsibility. This kind of goes back to the centering plans around the user experience instead of the technical aspects of who's responsible for something. So when I'm crossing, this was last year, and I haven't traveled this way as much this year yet, but I'm going east on Capitol Avenue walking, and I'm trying to cross Washington Street. There's a mound of ice outside the state Supreme Court building that blocks the way. There's a median in the middle of Washington Street that hasn't been shoveled at all. And then on the other side is a different state office building. So at this one intersection, I have a little bit of time through my work to be able to find these types of things out. Most people who have to walk through that situation they're walking there because they have to, right? You're walking there because that's how you have to get somewhere. Your job is downtown. You have to get to your job. You don't really have an option. Most people don't have the luxury of time of taking pictures and documenting and calling somebody else and Googling and figuring out who's supposed to be shoveling this walkway. They just want to be able to walk and cross the street. So I looked at who's responsible for this, and I started making some calls. I found out that on the one side, so on the north side of Capitol Avenue is the state capitol. So this is managed by the executive branch of the government.
Okay.
On the other side is the state Supreme Court. So that's managed by the judicial branch of this Connecticut state government. And across the street is the legislature. Right. So they have their own management. So do you think that these three branches of state government have one contractor that they use to clear this one intersection?
That would be the economical way of doing it.
That's not how they do it, though. Mm. So they actually have three different. Not only do they not have one contractor do it, each branch has their own list of contractors that they engage with. And so I'm calling the state because the state, frankly, has a lot more resources and uses Hartford's roads a lot more than the people of Hartford even have access to them. And so the state Supreme Court said, okay, we'll do our corner. The legislature in the Capitol says, okay, we'll figure this out. And the administration in the other building, eventually they figure it out. They've been doing a construction project there for months that's blocked pedestrian access, but that's a different issue. The middle of the street where the median is a city-owned road, Washington Street.
Okay.
So you have three branches of state government, three different lists of contractors, the city of Hartford responsible for clearing one road. Then you have the private landowner of the Bushnell responsible for clearing their sidewalk. And I said, this is outrageous. And who can I contact? Who's responsible for this as far as, you know, my representation? Who are the politicians and elected officials that might be interested in learning about this? And it's kind of a let's understand how the government works, right? So I looked at the legislative map, and this intersection is the border among three state rep districts and two state senate districts.
Oh, my God.
So there's five politicians, a municipal agency, and three branches of the state government and a private business with separate groups of people that they contract to clear one intersection.
This is where I say the system is broken. Would you say?
It's not working for a lot of people who walk and bike, I'll tell you that.
Exactly. You know, I think that I don't know what the answer is. I find that, unfortunately, a call to the press is sometimes a wonderful way to get a lot of attention. And it's that's how I got my problem solved out here. And it was just it wasn't even a call to the press. It was the idea that I would call to the press.
The concept of public shaming works better for some elected officials than others.
Certain ones, yeah. And so, you know, I think that's a good way. But, boy, wouldn't you just love to, like, go over to the governor's office and take him for a walk?
Yes, I would. Yes, I would. You know, I would love for the governor himself to go for a walk without me having to do that, because I think, you know, it's nice to take care of. And by the way, the highways and roads on the way out here, perfectly clean.
Yes.
You know,
I know.
I-95 is perfectly clear. It's a little bit wet. Perfectly clear.
Mm-hmm.
The sidewalk heading down to Capitol Avenue is a mess.
Yeah.
And the sidewalks around Buckland Hills Mall and in Manchester are a mess. The bus stops are not cleared around there.
Right.
You see footprints. It's not that no one's walking there. You see bike marks, tire marks. It's not that no one's biking there.
Right.
There's just not, you know, there's not the priority of clearing sidewalks in the same way that there are as clearing roads. And we, you know, honestly, I would love to see a place, and in some places they do this, in Syracuse, New York, where they get a lot more snow and ice than we do here.
Sure, Buffalo.
In different places in Scandinavia.
Sure.
They actually have a policy where the municipality takes responsibility for clearing sidewalks in the same way that they do clearing the roads, because they realize at a certain point, you know, I don't know, maybe it's the risk of lawsuits, maybe it's that they have some, you know, practical consideration of how are we going to actually fine these property owners for not, maybe it would just be simpler to just do it ourselves. Maybe that's a cost-benefit analysis, I don't know. But they have plenty of snow in Syracuse, and at some point they just said, we're going to take this on and do it ourselves, because we can't keep putting people at risk, waiting for people to take responsibility one by one. Right.
It gets
back to that 169 town provincialism that we're so fond of here in Connecticut.
I'm thinking about this right now, because when I lived in Willimantic for a number of years, and we were told that if you did not clear your sidewalk within, I think it was within like 12 hours of a snowstorm, yep, that you were going to get fined $100 for not clearing your sidewalk.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason that was done is so that the lawsuit issue would be taken off of the town's shoulders.
Yeah.
So that it would be stated that the homeowner is responsible for taking care of, or property owner is responsible for taking care of that sidewalk, which then leads to an insurance issue. Now, if we get the insurance industry into this, that might change a lot of things, because if they find out that you're not clearing your sidewalk and someone falls down and has a massive lawsuit against you, the homeowner or property owner, that might change some things. But, you know, not enough has happened yet, I guess.
I mean, again, you could ask those insurance folks, take a walk around Aetna's headquarters, take a walk from my neighborhood to the fast track station across from Aetna, take a walk around the Hartford, you know, walk past the big iron gates
and see...
what those sidewalks look like. They're in a neighborhood in my city, and you know, they're not always the most proactive people about taking care of those sidewalks.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, again, the property owner, you know, I think that is the way, and we have an ordinance in Hartford we've had for a number of years. It was revised when we kind of raised some of these issues with the city last year. And so in March 2019, the city passed a new ordinance that, with their current staff, and they said, you know, this is what we feel we can do. They assigned different responsibilities to different agencies. Part of it is having that ordinance on the books, and then part of it is, what capacity do you have to actually enforce that? What capacity do you have to take that on? And the city, you know, again, property ownership, if you say 50% of the land in the city of Hartford is even possible to be privately owned, home ownership rates are about 25-30% in the city. So you're not, there's only so much that you can really accomplish if you put every burden on a small homeowner. You know,
right,
at some point, there's got to be a bigger investment of resources to take care of that issue.
Sure.
So
Gannon,
get this.
I think we have a caller.
We do. We have Dave calling from Tolland, and he is a maintenance worker who clears sidewalks for the town of Manchester. So
really?
Here's Dave.
Hi, Dave. How you doing? Welcome to Bicycle Talk.
Good morning. It's a little bit incorrect. I'm a retired supervisor.
Oh, okay.
From the town of Manchester, and my responsibility was sidewalks.
Okay.
Thank you for your work clearing the sidewalks.
Yeah. Thank you for thanking me. I also coincidentally had a slip and fall accident on campus at UConn last year.
Oh. Oh my God.
Didn't get hurt severely, but I had stitches and a dislocated finger.
Wow.
Oh. And upon researching, three different attorneys told me there's a thing called sovereign immunity.
Oh, dear. And what exactly is that?
State. And I guess you can't sue towns either, because
really,
they're sovereign as well.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That is really interesting, because I do know a number of people, because I'm in the bicycle world, that have had accidents on roads and have gone after towns for, you know, not maintaining potholes and things like that. But
yeah.
I don't know, you know, I don't know if they got to go forward with that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if this is exactly right, but one of the attorneys said there was something like 500 cases brought against the state last year, and one of them might have been successful.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if it was last year or the year before or whatever.
You know what? They probably tie you up in their red tape and disorganization enough to make you go away.
Well, I guess there's a committee in the legislature that these cases get brought to, and they either get approved or denied.
Wow.
Yeah. And as far as sidewalk snow clearing, public works departments are often street sensitive.
Right.
That's really the priority.
Right. Well, what we're looking at here, especially in cycling and pedestrian use in these current times, is there's a big flow in that direction of people who are younger who are moving into cities and they're walking or riding their bicycles to work or for transportation or going to the store or whatever, and that seems to be picking up. And you know, there's a national trend on this right now, so it would be nice if those sidewalks were cleared. So if you were in Manchester, obviously the Charter Oak Trail goes right through Manchester.
Well, I was just going to bring that up. That was a policy decision not to maintain it during the winter. I've been retired about 5 years, so this probably goes back when that sidewalk was installed.
Really? That was a policy decision? Oh, boy. I'm going to have to give my advocacy friends in Manchester a little phone call here and talk to them about
it. Just speaking from the maintenance point of view,
yeah,
that would be a huge project.
I'm sure.
They already work a lot of hours.
Right.
Right.
And
it's a lot of overtime work when a storm is there.
And honestly, public works workers are some of the hardest working people around, right?
And I agree.
In Hartford, you know, we're understaffed, they're under capacity, they do a lot with very little, they don't have all the resources that they need. And again, they're taking care of resources that are used by everyone in the region, but that are funded only by a small number of people who live in the city. I think what we're talking about, I have nothing but respect for folks who do that work. It's incredibly hard. The rest of us are all snuggled up in our houses, and folks who work for public works departments are out there in the toughest environment clearing the snow. So I think we need to have a conversation about what are we able to do that we can support folks and get these things done, and how do we prioritize, you know, what we clear? Because roads and streets, you know, you got a few trucks or cars riding on them, they create heat that melts the snow and ice much faster than my boots or your bike tires, studded though they may be, can create that friction on a sidewalk, right? And so I end up walking in the street. You know, cars might be upset about that, but that's the safest option for a lot of people. Now, I'm a 6 foot tall, fit person. Now, I have friends who have baby strollers, and they're walking down a sidewalk because they don't want to walk in the middle of the street. They struggle to lift the stroller over the ice that the plows leave on the corner. You know, people, you see it all the time in my city. People in wheelchairs go down the street because the sidewalks are in such disrepair.
I saw it last night right in Willimantic. Yeah,
it's frequent. One other thing about taking care of the bike trails is once you get traffic on a trail or a sidewalk, those footprints or bike tracks kind of get compacted and turn into much more difficult material to remove.
They really do. They turn into ice is what they do. And it's, you know, it becomes like we find even on the trails that are out our way, which are primarily stone dust out here. That's the longest place for the defrost to happen as the weather starts to turn. Because a lot of people have walked on it or ridden bikes on it or whatever, and they've created ruts and frozen, icy sections.
And
so.
You mentioned people with strollers and maybe people who aren't as physically fit. This slip and fall accident that I had on campus last year, I mean, I'm pretty fit, and I worked in this industry for 30 years. I mean, I still had a slip and fall on black ice across the street from Gamble near the co-op.
Oh.
This is a roof that's open from the second story, from the top of the building.
Yes.
The snow and ice falls to the sidewalk.
I know it well.
It's unbelievable to me. I pursued it with a supervisor, and he said they do the best they can. But having experience in this field, they really need to have somebody there all the time, because this, if there's any snow or ice on the roof, it's going to fall off eventually.
Sure it is.
Right,
sure it
gravity,
is.
Right?
Yeah. And you get enough heat on the roof, and it's just going to let loose. And a lot of the roofs that are around here are now metal, which makes it loosen and,
exactly.
I mean, we're not talking about coming down in small chunks here. We're talking about avalanches coming off the roofs.
Well, and this is what we're talking about you know, just calls to mind the cliche, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Yes.
Right? We have such sophisticated weather prediction technology these days. It's mind-blowing how accurate these reports are. And very rarely is there an ice storm that hasn't been predicted for days in advance.
Right.
It's never a surprise. I mean, you know, when you see in the forecast a few days from now that it's going to snow and then the temperature is going to drop, you know that that snow is going to be frozen as soon as that Wednesday comes. And so, you know, the more that people do to be proactive about it, to put sand or, you know, salt or other methods that I'm sure you know more about. The caller who's an expert in this, I think Dave is your name. You know, there's all kinds of things people can do in advance that make it easier and make the work less of clearing the ice. Once you have a mountain of ice that plows have left on a corner, it's very difficult to clear that out. And so that's kind of the, you know, when I called the state Supreme Court facilities management this past winter, I pointed out, hey, you have a mountain of ice that's blocking people from using your sidewalk. Looks okay, but you can't get to that sidewalk.
Right.
And they're like, well, ma'am, you know, it's very icy out. It's a huge mountain. I'm like, yeah, it is.
I know.
So you have to stay on top of that type of thing.
Yeah, I could elaborate and give many examples of.
I'm sure you could, Dave. I really appreciate your calling in on this. This is really helpful.
You know, to the program, my ears are ringing, and you know, it's an interesting topic, but just, you know, the part about the bike trails would be an immense burden for the municipalities, I'm sure.
Well, you know, I'm going to talk to, I have connections with the East Coast Greenway people, and I'm just going to give Bruce a call, this gentleman named Bruce Donald, and see what he has to say about
it.
Because, you know, it wouldn't even be a bad idea for it to become a community project in certain sections. You know how you adopt a highway sort of thing?
Sure.
And we might be able to get some sort of resolve with it that way. But
you'd need equipment.
Lots of people with lots of shovels.
I don't know how much time you have, but when they added a second section from Charter Oak Park up to the top of Highland, there.
Yes.
That was an extra mile of maintenance that we had to take care of mowing.
Right.
We got no extra personnel. We got no extra time.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's a mile of mowing on both sides of the side of the trail.
Well, I can see your dilemma for sure. Yeah.
So and it's really not an emphasis.
Yeah.
For park maintenance.
It's well,
for bare bones and doing what they can with the streets.
Well, that's unfortunate. Well, discussions like this hopefully will start getting people to think in a different direction. And I really appreciate your feedback here today. It's been very helpful.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And thanks again for your work.
Thanks for calling in, Dave.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. Yep, bye-bye. So anyway, that was interesting.
Yeah.
From a perspective from someone who's with Public Works, who has to deal with this. And, you know, I think about it as, well, I'm important. I ride a bicycle, or I'm important. I walk. And I forget about the fact that, you know, they are limited to a budget and they're limited to what they can and cannot do.
I mean, that just kind of emphasizes the need for a more coordinated approach and more investment in these types of issues. We know that climate change is getting worse. We know that it snows in New England. We know that ice is going to come every winter. It's never a surprise.
Yep.
So, you know, we need to really tackle this, you know, from a more coordinated approach. And I would just say, you know, I completely understand a town saying we don't have the resources to clear this in the wintertime. At the same time, that's when you actually need to spend more resources on
clear,
you know, on these types of things.
Right. And I know the budgets are pushed up in the wintertime because they know that they're going to have, you know, clearance issues and storm issues. But, you know, but maybe it's just not enough.
And town budgets are limited. They depend on money from the state that a lot of towns have been waiting for the last several months.
Yeah.
So, you know, the way that, again, I think it gets back to having somebody who walks that path, having somebody who commutes that way, you're going to understand right away what the issue is. And you're, you know, you don't want to have to call three different agencies and four different branches of government to get a sidewalk on one intersection cleared.
It seems like a simple
project. It seems like too much work for a citizen to have to do that every time
I agree.
I agree.
So, hey, we're getting closer here. So I'm going to ask, what's going on in Hartford? What's going on in your end? I mean, BCCO has always been, you know, they're very good friends of Bicycle Talk.
Yeah.
Tony's been on and a number of times. And so we love talking, you know, what's going on in Hartford.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, if I can take a minute to just brag about the teenagers that I've worked with over the summer and through this fall, that's been a really wonderful experience. And I think I sent you a presentation. You can, if folks are interested, they can check out our website and find a number of presentations from the Multimodal and Transit Summit that took place in New Haven this past November. There are people talking about complete streets. There are folks from the state, from the federal government, planners, different agencies, advocates, researchers. We had an amazing keynote address from Charles Smith you can find on there. So the teenagers that I work with this summer, we had a six-week program, and we met at 95 Park Street every day in, for 6 weeks. We had a wonderful spread of food potluck at the end of the 6 weeks, which was really important to the kids,
nice.
And I loved doing that. You know, they're all food people, so I felt very comfortable with them. We all love to eat. But, you know, it was amazing how many different places we were able to go and explore just from that site, really close to Park and Main Street in the city. We could go. We went to Colt Park, and we met with the city forester who was talking about the importance of trees, especially in urban environments. You know, Hartford's an old city. We have lots of old trees. And you can even match what trees were planted with the architecture. You can sort of say, oh, this tree is a certain age. It was planted here when this building was up. And
that's
it just really, the built and the natural landscape really work together in a beautiful way. At this time, you know, we're losing a lot of those older trees. And so there's a really great need to keep replanting them for private homeowners to do that, as well as for more funding and more support for the city to be able to do that in different places. Because old trees really do a lot that even younger trees can't do as far as capturing carbon in the ground, providing oxygen, providing shade, you know, all of those types of things. So the teenagers were really interested. We literally met under a black oak tree that was about 100-something years old and learned from this. Heather Dion is a city forester. She's excellent. So that was a great experience. We walked up Main Street to Center Church, which is the second oldest standing building in the city. It was from the early 1800s. Learned about the history of the Charter Oak being hidden in a tree and being absconded from the church and, you know, pre-colonialist times. And one of the most proud moments as a graduate of Hartford High that I had was somebody, you know, in the volunteer who was giving us a tour. In this beautiful historic church, there's Tiffany windows, there's monuments to different prominent citizens who were members. She said, "Does anybody know what happened in 1636, which is the year of the founding of Hartford?" And one of the kids that I work with said, "That's 2 years before Hartford High was founded." I said, "Absolutely. You can't rock the pub. Go else." So it was a great experience. But we also did some work with the city planning department where we went on a walk audit. And this is something that folks, if you're interested in these issues and you're interested in kind of seeing how people experience walking around in your town or your community, if there's an intersection or an area that you're concerned about, you know, what something folks can do is reach out to different people who care about that issue, reach out to people who work for your town or your city, and get together. Walk that area, take some notes. You know, the planning mm-hmm. department in Hartford has a great metric that they've put together. We're super pleased to be partners with them. And it was awesome. We had a traffic engineer, we had a city planner, and then we had a group of teenagers. They're all recording what the conditions were on the sidewalk on Main Street. And that data is going to go towards the city plans when they actually do a repaving and kind of refiguring of the street. So they had all kinds of great experiences. They helped organize a meeting around the Transportation and Climate Initiative, which is a regional effort to curb greenhouse gas emissions in the Northeast region that folks can find out more about. So they had a really broad experience, and we've continued that a little bit through the fall. But it's awesome to be able to get their perspective and, you know, have a chance for them to be giving their input and their perspective, because honestly, teenagers that walk around and take the bus know a lot of things that transportation planners who work for the Department of Transportation don't know.
They never see or pay attention to. You know, the elimination of ignorance begins with youth. It really does. And what you did was, it sounds really cool, very rewarding, very cool. And think of what these kids took away from that. That's great.
When we think about it, I mean, they got to meet a lot of different people. They got to explore a lot of places that they might have walked by and never really thought about. But you also, it's important to think about, you know, the city of Hartford hasn't always looked the way it looks today. There wasn't always this highway that split up these neighborhoods. There wasn't always this abandoned storefront on this corner. You know, and when you look at what it's been and what it could be, then you start thinking about what could it look like in the future. So we're now, this fall, we had an opportunity to meet with with the chair of the Planning and Zoning Commission, members of the Planning and Zoning Commission. They're writing a city plan for conservation and development. They're supposed to do it every 10 years. So this is a 15-year plan because we're going to be 400 in about 15 years from now. So we had a great opportunity to meet with them and share some perspective on how these kids get around today and what they'd like to see, what would keep them in Hartford, what would make them come back 15 years from now.
Yeah.
And that's really what, you know, that's really what we're trying to get is, you know, how can we make a city livable for people in the future and include that perspective. So I think it was a great chance to engage with them. You know, one of the things that they loved doing the best was a debate. So
really?
If you've been to if you've been to Center Church, it's at the corner of Main and Gold Street in Hartford. There's a famous sculpture. It's called Stone Field. It's kind of a series of rocks that have been huge boulders that have been positioned outside the church. Mm-hmm. And it's right near the cemetery and that sort of between the cemetery and the street. So this was very controversial. It was put in 1979. It was funded by the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving and the National Endowment for the Arts. And they paid this artist an incredible amount of money at the time to put these boulders in a certain arrangement. Some people love it. It's it's peaceful. It's, you know, strategic. It's an amazing use of the land. It makes the land look bigger than it really is. Kind of interesting perspective. Other people said, hey, you just put a bunch of rocks on a field. What are you doing?
Hey, Stonehenge is a bunch of rocks.
Fair enough, right? So I felt kind of ambivalent about it. And so we read about it. The kids did, you know, researched it. And they engaged in a debate about whether it was a good idea to invest in that or not. And from then on, you know, it was a great chance for them to express themselves, to feel heard, to hone their arguments, you know, to do research and incorporate their lived experience, you know, convince their colleagues, all that type of stuff. So after that, we did a debate every week in the program. And I think that was one of their favorite things, too.
That's great. Well, you know what? We've done it. We've used up a full hour here and we've talked all about this. My guest today has been Gannon Long, and she is from Transport. She is the Transport Hartford Assistant Coordinator at the Center for Latino Progress, and an unbelievable wealth of information. And you will be a repeat visitor to the show, I'm hoping.
I would love to come back.
That's great. That's great, because this has been fun, and I've learned a lot, and we even caught the attention of a good listener here who was very interested in hearing what we had to say. This was very good. It all leads back to transportation and bicycles and walking and, you know, the obvious human experience of transporting yourself without using a motorized vehicle. And I think this is great. And at some point, I want to talk to you about Frog Hollow because that fascinates me that you live there. Obviously, there's a lot of stories there. But we won't get into that right now. I have to finish up the show here. So I'm going to just go down here and take a look. As far as events go, I have a couple of events put on by CNS, which is our CCAP group, the nice development program down there in Middletown. And there is a Winter Ride Rising Challenge on Sunday, December 29th in Middletown, Connecticut. So, and actually it says here December 29th through Saturday, January 4th. So if you want to know more about that, you can find out about it by going to bikeredge.com and you can get information there. Also, there are a few other things here. Let's see. That's still through the 28th of December. There's the Fast Splits CompuTrainer Saturday Hill Climb class, which is interesting for those of you who are into indoor training and competition. So the Winter Rise Challenge, of course, I just mentioned. So anyway, there's definitely a few things still happening, even though we are in the dead of winter here or darn close to it. I guess officially it doesn't start until the 21st, right? Winter itself. It just feels like winter because we are just covered in snow and ice and slipperiness here. But anyway, that is what it is. It's New England and it's winter. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast and would like to comment, you can send an email to bicycletalk bicycletalk@gmail.com. And you can also listen to more and past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, or better yet, be on the show as a guest, send me an email, bicycletalk@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.